I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. I first saw David Bromberg perform at a small coffee house in Atlanta back in 1971. This was around the time of the release of his first album. And now, many albums later, after a long performing career, including some time off to build and collect violins, David Bromberg has a new CD, The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues with the David Bromberg Band. Here's the title song.
Take the stand, raise up my right hand, get me a stack of Bibles 10 feet high. I want a jury of my peers, 'cause I need everyone to hear. I'm ready to testify. It was my best friend and my wife, clean destroyed my life, made my worst nightmare come true. That's the blues. Get right down on the business. I'll call my first witness. That woman said she loved only me. I found her intertwined with that so-called friend of mine. Call her Exhibit A, make him B. You know what chills me to the bone? How has this been going on? And when I asked them to stop, they refused. Oh, that's the blues.
David Bromberg has always had a deep connection to the blues. He took guitar lessons from the Reverend Gary Davis back in the 1960s. Bromberg has collaborated with many musicians, including, and here's a partial list, Bob Dylan, Carly Simon, The Eagles, Ringo Starr, George Harrison, Tom Rush, John Prine, and Willie Nelson. David Bromberg joins us on Radio Times to talk about his life, his new album, and the blues. And David Bromberg, a great pleasure. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Oh, it's so nice to be here.
So where'd you find this song? It's such a great song.
Actually, we had chosen The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues to be the title of the CD before I found that song.
Really?
Yeah. It's a complex story about how we found it, but it's a Gary Nicholson, Russell Smith, but this is the second one of Gary's that I've recorded.
Well, I have to say, I'm looking at the album cover here, and it looks like a newspaper here, and here you are on trial, accused of low-down, dirty country blues. The defendant promises the blues, the whole blues, and nothing but the blues. Whose idea was it to create this courtroom scene for your cover?
Guilty.
Guilty.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. You, obviously.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun with that. And I got the photographer, Jim McGuire, to come out of retirement to do it.
D.A. regales the jury with claims of bent notes and bent morals. Bromberg on the stand testifies there's only two songs, The Star-Spangled Banner and The Blues. And that's something that Willie Nelson had said.
I heard it from Willie Nelson, but I think Johnny Gimble was the first one to say it. And that kind of gives you some latitude. But I thought that we'd do all kinds of things, which is what my records usually are. But I'd originally asked Larry Campbell to produce a record of Chicago blues for me. He said, no, let's do this one. You know, let's stick to the blues pretty tight. And we did.
Well, you have been singing the blues, really, since you were a young performer coming up. What is it about that kind of music? I think we just heard it. But what is it about that kind of music that you connect with?
Well, it's many kinds of music. First of all, the blues is actually and always has been a marketing term. And in the 30s, anything that an African American did was called the blues, whether it's what we would consider the blues or not today. It's soulful music. And for me, if it's not soulful, I don't want to bother with it.
Really?
And the blues is soulful and full of irony. And I love the ironic side of it, too.
Well, I'd love to play another song from your album, and this perhaps speaks just what you were talking about. How Come My Dog Don't Bark When You Come Round? Let's play it, and then we'll talk a little bit about this song. And this is from David Bromberg's new album, The Blues, The Whole Blues, Nothing But The Blues.
Mm-hmm. I got the meanest bulldog he'd known for miles around. He protects my woman when I get out of town. Oh, he's vicious, he's a killer, ready to attack. I don't want nobody messing with my baby when I turn my back. I believe she's a one-man earn, and I know he's a one-man hound. So how come my dog don't bark when you come round? He bit the milkman, he bit the mailman, he bit the chief of police. He won't let my kids play in the yard, they gotta play out in the street. Oh, he's crazy, he's intense, oh, you can see it in his eye. You know that dog would jump a grizzly bear and cut him down to size. I believe she's a one-man woman, and I know he's a one-man hound. How come my dog don't bark when you come around. How
come my dog don't bark when you come around? That's David Bromberg, vocals and electric guitar, Mark Cosgrove, electric guitar, Butch Amiot, bass guitar, Josh Kanuski, drums, Nate Grower, fiddle, Bill Payne, keyboard, Steve Bernstein, trumpet, Lou Marini, saxophone, Birch Johnson, trombone, Larry Campbell, horn arrangement.
Yep.
That sounds terrific. And this is an unknown writer, right?
Well, yeah, I learned the tune from a lead sheet I got in the 70s before I was going to do a CD, but I got it too late to record it. But I learned it. We performed it once or twice, not a whole lot. It deserved more. And there's another tune there are three or four tunes with the very same title.
Ah.
But there's one by a guy named Prince Patridge that was written in 1955 that everybody's recorded, and Dr. John just did a great version of it. And so I wrote it down on a list, and Larry saw it, and he said, well, let's see how you do this song, expecting to hear the Prince Patridge. And I remembered the first verse of it, and I said, that's great, we got to do it. I said, well, I got to go on the internet and find the rest of the verses. It ain't there. Not only did I not record it, it appeared that no one did.
Wow.
After many months of research, we found that there was a guy named Sunset Slim who had recorded the very same song, but we haven't been able, still can't find out who wrote it. The only way I was able to get the other verses is there's a guy named Jason Flair in California who has tapes of every show of mine that anybody ever snuck a recording of. And I call him up, you know, say, do you have a version of this song? And he said, oh, yeah, that was Minneapolis, 1974. Just a minute, I'll send it to you. And that's
how I got. How come he has all your recordings and you don't?
He gave me copies, okay. But he knows what's where.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. I love the horn section in that as well.
Oh, yeah, it's great. The horn section, yeah.
You have collaborated several times with this guy, Larry Campbell. We were talking about him before going on the air. Producer, what, arranger?
Yes, producer, arranger. And these days he and his wife, Teresa Williams, are also performing together. He's another Dylan alumnus. He was with Bob for 8 years, I think. That's a long stretch.
And what does he bring out in your music, do you think?
He really... It's like we went to the same school different years in an awful lot of ways. He can refer to all the genres that I like, and that in itself is unusual. He's also – I started my career as an accompanist, and I took the idea of being an accompanist very, very seriously, and I think I was good at it. But Larry is the best there's ever been.
Wow. Wow.
He's phenomenal. That's why I included Delia on the CD, because after we did the first CD together, which was called Only Slightly Mad, he and I did some gigs, just the two of us, and I never wanted anybody else to play on Delia, but he was sitting there, and what he did just knocked me out. It still does.
In fact, we're going to play Delia a little bit later on in the show, that the original version and the one on this new CD. What do you, though, look for in a band? I mean, you've been part of, you've accompanied so many different people. You've been, I'm assuming, in a sense, part of other people's bands. What do you look for in a musician?
Well, I look for a certain amount of technical ability. But beyond that, attitude is extraordinarily important. If you have somebody who is pretty good but has a great attitude, they will end up being the best person for that slot, much better than somebody who's a complete virtuoso and couldn't care less.
And attitude is sort of being collaborative.
Yeah.
It's about the music. It's not about me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm very, very happy with the musicians I'm working with now. I think this is the best group I've had.
Really?
Yeah.
Really. And it's so interesting. I mean, I read a partial list of people that you've played with. I mean, there must be so much to learn when you're an accompanist or part of a of someone else's band.
There always is. When you stop learning, you may as well throw it away.
And you're still learning.
Oh, yeah.
And you're still performing.
Yes. I stopped for 22 years.
Yes, you did.
But I started again.
And what's it like being on the road?
Well, I enjoy it. I'm with a group of people who I really love. And they're a kick every night. I mean, one of the things that we do that's a little unusual is that we have never had a set list. As a matter of fact—
Nothing written down?
Never.
Ever?
Well, I actually, for one of the guys who used to play with me, I wrote one. It said, opening tune, whatever I feel like. Second tune, whatever I feel like next. Third, C second, and so on. And that's the way it goes. So we have a huge repertoire. We have a repertoire of about 90 tunes.
Wow.
And nobody, including me, knows what's going to come out.
So it's just whatever seems right at that moment for
yes.
you, David Bromberg?
Yes, and I try and reach for things we haven't played for in a while.
And do they know just sort of how you're getting set to play, where you're going?
The majority of the time I'll just start, and they'll get it from the first couple of notes on the guitar. But sometimes I'll turn around and say, let's do, you know,
And
I'll give them the name.
and go from there.
And go from there.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with David Bromberg, he's got a new album. It's called The Blues, The Whole Blues, Nothing But The Blues. This is Walkin' Blues. It's written by Robert Johnson. You can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at @WHYYRadioTimes to join our conversation. Much more music and conversation after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen talking with David Bromberg. He's been performing since the 1960s. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He has his own band, the David Bromberg Band, and he's got a new CD as well, and we are playing selections from that. And again, you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. We have an email from Daniel. He says, when I hear the name David Bromberg, I picture his King Kong album cover with him hanging off the Empire State Building. The thought of it still makes me laugh.
That was Jim McGuire's idea, the photographer.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's quite a guy, Jim McGuire. He moved down to Nashville and worked with everyone there. He's retired now, which is I didn't realize it when I asked him to do this cover. But he said, well, I'm retired, but
I'll do it. I'll do it anyway.
Yeah.
I do want to play another song from your new album. It's called This Month. It's actually written by you. Give us a bit of the backstory, and then we'll give it a listen.
Well, I started a couple of jam sessions in Wilmington when I moved there. I hadn't been playing, and it was actually those jam sessions that got me into doing it again. And one of the nights when we were playing, I played a tune, and some guy in the audience said, "Oh, do that tune about the second time she quit me," and it occurred to me, second time she quit me this month, and so I sat down and wrote the song in about 15 minutes.
Wow, is that a record for you? Are you one to fuss over lyrics?
Sometimes yes and sometimes no. You know, when people ask me, how do you write a song, the answer is any way you can.
And this one just came to you?
This one just came out.
And when he said, play that song, you actually hadn't written this song
No,
yet?
No.
Well, let's play it. And it's this month from David Bromberg's new album, The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues.
The first time that woman quit me this month, she wouldn't tell me why. Yeah, the first time that woman left me, first time this month, she wouldn't even tell me why. Eat, sleep, drink, or work. All I could do to stretch out across the bed, stretch out across the bed and cry. Now the second time that she quit me this month, the second time, second time this month, I really did lose my mind, I did. Oh, the second time the woman left me this month, I lost my mind, I just lost it. I lost my mind. I was walking around the apartment talking to myself. I didn't know whether to sit or go blind. Oh, help me.
Again, that's David Bromberg's song This Month from his new CD. It's just hilarious. I mean, the lyrics are terrific, and I love the kind of hesitation before you said she left me again essentially this month.
Yeah. It's fun, and it has a punchline.
It does.
Yeah,
it
and does. It's ironic, and I just
sounds like a David Bromberg song, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm watching you listening to yourself on a CD. Do you enjoy doing that?
Usually not, but I'm very proud of this record. And what I was just thinking as we were listening to it is how lucky I was to have bought the guitar that I'm using on this in the '60s. I'm just lucky to own it. Nothing else sounds like it.
And you're playing, is this one of your original guitars then? Or is this a 60s guitar that you bought recently?
No, I bought it in the 60s.
And you bought it in the 60s. So this has been...
It's a Fender Esquire from 1958, I think. Mm. And when I bought it, it was used. These days, it's vintage.
Yes.
the sound is, I mean, I had a great collection of guitars. But when I stopped playing for 22 years... I knew I would never play again, and I sold just about everything. But this one is going in the coffin with me.
Well, let's talk about the years really you spent off the road. And was it being on the road that just became too much?
I was on the road at one point for 2 years without being home for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And I got burnt out, and I must admit I was too stupid to realize it was burnout.
What did it feel like?
I felt like I wasn't a musician. I wasn't practicing when I come off the road. I wasn't practicing. I wasn't writing. I wasn't jamming. I wasn't a musician when I was off the road. Of course, I was living in Northern California in Marin County, and it's not so easy to get together with people and play. And I was burnt out. Wow. So I decided I didn't want to be one of these guys who does a bitter imitation of what he used to love. So I decided I had to find another way to live my life that I would enjoy, and I did. I found something that I still do enjoy doing.
And you ended up in Wilmington, Delaware, and I mean, Wilmington is part of our listening area. Uh-huh. I don't mean to be – and I grew up partly in Delaware, so I don't mean to be shocked and surprised, but what took you to Wilmington, Delaware?
Well, my wife Nancy and I couldn't handle the Chicago winters again. We'd been there for quite a while. And we're Easterners, we're Yankees. We wanted to move east, and we didn't feel we could afford New York, so we decided to go somewhere where it might be marginally warmer, but not the South. We're not Southerners, we're Yankees. And I had a friend at the time who lived in Wilmington, so...
Yeah. It worked?
It worked.
And this is when, did you start then violin collecting and even violin building during this hiatus in your performing career?
I'd actually started before. When I started playing violin, I needed something to play on. And the first violin I bought was made in the United States. And I thought that was fitting because the music that I play is American music. And I have a collector's bent. So I started picking up violins made in America, and it was easy because at the time it was the opinion of the violin stores in the United States that there were no good ones made here.
Really?
Yeah, that was the conviction.
They were all made in Europe?
All the good ones were made in Europe, or the ones that were made here really should be called European because they were made by European immigrants, or they were made in a style that these makers associated with Italy or Germany or France. And it was really nonsense. And I was astounded they couldn't open their eyes and see what they had. And
you have 263 or 60-something violins.
Yeah,
and all American made.
Yes, and I've given lectures to all of the violin societies. I've given three or four to the Violin Society of America, the VSA, one at the Federation of Master Violin and Bow Makers, and one to the International Entente. And I think... I've been told that those lectures changed some opinions.
Wow.
And so today it's very different.
Well, you know, I'm thinking there's so many luthiers in the U.S. making guitars, and I wonder if that's also true for violin.
It is. Yeah, there are quite a few makers. I was never really interested in making. I learned to make so that I would understand what I was looking at. Wow. I wanted to be someone who could identify violins. And like music, this is a bottomless pit. You will learn as much as you can, but no one will ever reach the bottom. No one will ever know it all.
And is it something just about the shape of the violin, the history, what it sounds like to play, what it feels like to play? What's your... connection, because clearly I can see it the way you're talking about violins. What's the passion about?
Gee, I don't know.
You don't know?
No, I'm a very lousy fiddler, but I think they're beautiful things. I think I somewhat understand them. Nobody completely understands them. I have a little understanding of them, and. With American violins, I'm the one everybody calls.
Oh, interesting. Let me get Kate from, it looks like, Morristown to join our conversation. Hi, Kate. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times. Do we have Kate?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Kate, go ahead. Yes. Go ahead.
I wanted to say that my uncle, Louis Kondax, an inventor for Kodak, was an amateur maker of violins. He and Isaac Stern collaborated together for, I think, years, trying to figure out what it was that makes a Stradivarius sound different from other violins, and they thought that they had it in the varnish that was used on those violins. Do you know anything about whether that ever proved to be true or whether that other theory about the rings on the wood being closer together on some of the violins from way back made the sound different. Any ideas?
Okay, thanks for the call. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Louis Kondax.
Are you?
Yeah,
wonderful.
He made
Did
some.
You know him?
No, I never knew him, but he made some nice violins. And varnished, he also varnished violins that he didn't make.
Yes, that's right.
For other makers. Varnish was his specialty.
Hmm. And yes, that's right. I'd love to talk to you sometime. It's a terrific show. I'm glad you're on.
Well, thank you for calling, Kate. Yeah, go ahead.
The importance of varnish to the sound of violin is most likely overrated because we now know that Stradivarius bought his varnish from the same people that everyone else in town bought their varnish.
Oh, wow.
He was a member of a guild, the Instrument Makers Guild, and the first law of every guild was that you had to patronize the other guilds. He would have been kicked out if he concocted his own varnish. What went under the varnish, however, is still a bit of a mystery, but I don't think it's the answer to why his violins sound the way that they do, and I'm not sure that they sound completely different than anybody else's violins. It's...
No, I appreciate the phone call to Radio Times, and I should add that the Library of Congress wants to buy some of your violins.
Yes. I really want the collection to go there, and they're raising money to buy a portion of my collection, and I'll donate all the rest. And they want to have them.
Yeah. And get them out of your house, I guess.
Well, my wife calls it the world's most expensive wallpaper, and it's beautiful wallpaper.
I bet it is.
Yeah.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. David Bromberg is our guest in this hour of Radio Times, longtime musician, guitarist, singer, performer. And he's got a new CD. It's called The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But the Blues with the David Bromberg Band. And we've been playing selections from this new CD, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. I do want to play two versions you have of your song, Delia. Delia was on your first album, going back to, 1972?
Mm-hmm.
A self-titled album. This is, a traditional song, would you say?
I learned it from the singing of Willie McTell, but Gary Davis also had a version of it. There's 22 Delia songs about the murder of Delia Green in Savannah, Georgia, New Year's Eve, 1900.
Wow. Well, this is David Bromberg's 1972 version of Delia, and then we'll be playing his version from his new album. And let's give the first Delia a listen.
Well, Delia was a gambling girl. She gambled all around. Oh, she was a gambling girl. She would lay her money down. She's all I've got is gone. Dee's dear old mother took a trip out west. When she returned, little Delia had gone to rest. She's all I've got is gone.
David Bromberg's 1972 version or edition of the song Delia. And David, you were saying this was actually recorded at a Philadelphia studio in Germantown.
It wasn't a studio. It was a coffee house.
Though
it was called World Control Studios.
And it was recorded live there.
Yeah, it was a live concert.
All right, so while that people are listening to this, this is Delia from David Bromberg's new album, and let's give this a listen.
Was a gambling girl, she gambled all around. Oh, she was a gambling girl, and she could lay her money down. She's all I got is gone.
Cordelia's dear old mama took a trip out west, and when she returned, little Delia been laid to rest. She's all I got is gone.
And again, Delia from David Bromberg's new album. It's so interesting to hear your voice on those two albums.
Well, I just love hearing what Larry plays on the new version of Delia. That's why I want to record it again, only so I could get Larry's playing on it out. It's just gorgeous.
And what do you think of your voice?
I think I do better with it these days. I was told a lot of things that could improve singing that really needed a lot. During the period when I wasn't playing, I started to put some of that together.
People giving you advice about your voice?
Phoebe Snow gave me the best advice. She was a friend, and she told me some things. And also for a while, when I was living in California, I took some voice lessons from a woman named Jane Sharp. Singing flat, see Jane Sharp.
Uh-huh. I want to pick up on that after this very short break. And this is another song from, I should say, David Bromberg's new album, The Blues, The Whole Blues, Nothing But The Blues. This is 900 Miles. We'll take a very short break. Get back to our conversation.
I got tears in my eyes. I'm trying to read a letter from my home. If that train'll run me right, I'll be home tomorrow night. And I'm 900 miles from my home. And I hate to hear that lonesome whistle blow.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with David Bromberg about his new album, his long career, why he sings the blues, and his passion for American-made violins. Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We've got David from Flemington joining us. David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, Marty.
Sure.
I just wanted to ask your guest, in terms of lyrics and sentiment, could a lot of country music be considered the blues? Thank you.
Sure. Thanks, David.
Well, it depends who's doing the considering, but absolutely, in my opinion, there's a lot more communication, or there was, between the white and the black musicians, and there are tunes that are part of both traditions. Sitting on Top of the World, you find white country versions of it, and you find it a blues in the repertoire of a lot of African-American musicians. And there would be no bluegrass without blues. There were two influences on Bill Monroe who started what's now called bluegrass. And one of them was his uncle, Penn Vandiver. Hmm. And the other was an African-American blues player who was never recorded, unfortunately, named Arnold Schultz. And he's spoken about this quite a bit. There's a lot of things that go from one to other, and it's interesting that this would come up because we just played our recording of 900 Miles, which is an old-timey country tune that we were doing in that fashion, which I wanted to record, but it's a blues album. Right. And I also wanted to do a Howlin' Wolf tune, but all the really good ones had been done to death. So we made 900 Miles into a Howlin' Wolf tune.
And there it is.
And nobody's questioned it, you know. Why should they? It could just as easily go there.
I want to play A Slow Drag by Reverend Gary Davis. Now, first heard him in New York back in the 60s?
I heard recordings of him in Tarrytown, and then when I was in New York going to Columbia University, I found him. I was walking down the street, and he was playing in a coffee house called the Dragon's Den, and I went in and listened, and it was just wonderful. And afterwards, I asked him if he'd give me lessons, and he said, Sure, $5. Bring the money, honey. And that was the reverend. And after a while, I stopped paying him $5 and would lead him to his concert. He was blind. So I'd lead him to concerts or church in order to pay for the lessons.
Let's listen. This is a slow drag by the Reverend Gary Davis.
Sounds like two guitars.
Okay, fair enough. Slow drag by the Reverend Gary Davis. Did he teach you finger picking or?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all he did. He used one finger and his thumb. And
That's what we're hearing? One finger and a thumb?
One finger and a thumb on the right hand. Right. All five fingers, including the thumb on the left hand.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a very unique player.
I also read that he took you to church.
Yeah.
And you listened to preachers, you listened to the music. What did you learn about being a musician from going to a church with Reverend Gary Davis?
I learned an awful lot. If you listen to B.B. King playing, he has said that his tone on the electric guitar comes out of trying to emulate the sound that Lonnie Johnson got on the acoustic guitar. And you can hear this. His choice of notes is his own. Mm. His phrasing is a preacher's. His phrasing is church. And Albert King's is too. And I realized that in the churches, that's where that comes from. And it's very different from the rock and roll blues players who play a continuous line. You know, Eric Clapton does it beautifully. But the my favorite blues players, they preach. And I actually sometimes think to myself, I'm going to preach this one.
That's so interesting. I ran across a quote from you. One of the big distinctions between really fine white blues guitar players and the African-American blues guitar players is that African-American guitar players know how to use rests.
Yeah.
That is church.
Yes, absolutely. And the thing is that what a rest does in a sermon or in a solo is it makes you really want to hear what's coming next.
And that was perfect because there was that rest, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I leaned into my microphone here just to hear.
I tell people the best notes I play are rests and they think I'm being funny, but I'm not. The rest is a musical note and a very important one.
Let me play. This is Skip James, Crow Jane, and we read this is one of your favorite blues musicians, and then we'll get to some callers. This is Crow Jane, Skip James. Skip James, Crow Jane, one of David Bromberg's favorite blues musicians. Let me get some more callers into the conversation. We've got Stephen from the main line. Stephen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Dave. I was a student at the American University in Washington, D.C. from 1972 to 1976, and I'm pretty sure David played the university. But I remember a performance that I attended at a very unique venue called Glen Echo Park. And I was wondering if David had any recollections of that.
Well, let's find out, Stephen. And you said you kind of shook your head. No, David.
No, I can't. It doesn't ring a bell at all. I remember the university, though. That was I met the Newgrass Revival backstage because they were on the bill, too. So it was Leo Kottke. For some reason, that one sticks in my mind.
Oh, wow. Thanks for calling, Stephen. We have an email from Joan. The first time I saw David was when he was backing up Jerry Jeff Walker at the Main Point. Approximately 69 or 70, I spent the entire time watching a tall, skinny kid who was absolutely mesmerizing, much more interesting than Jerry Jeff. I see him still most frequently at the Philadelphia Folk Festival, and I still buy his records. A nice memory there.
Yeah, that's very nice. I learned a lot from playing with Jerry Jeff. I think the thing of not having set lists, I suspect that comes from playing with Jerry Jeff.
You were telling me before we went on the air about some of your performances with Mississippi John Hurt here in Philadelphia.
Well, I was playing guitar for a singer named Jerry Moore, who I haven't seen in about 50 years. I was accompanying him, and we were the opening act for Mississippi John, who performed by himself. But backstage, it was like a week or 2 weeks. In those days, your engagements were much longer than they are today. And John and I would sit around backstage and just play and play and play. And that was a real pleasure.
I bet. Let me get Bill from Brussels, Belgium to join us. Hi, Bill. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Great show,
Thank
as
you.
Always.
Thank you.
It's great to see that David Bromberg is back on the scene.
Absolutely.
Happy to hear he's got his album out. I used to play with a guy who did Danger Man. We used to play Danger Man in the bars around Brussels. My question was, Mr. Bromberg, is what's the story on O'Sharon? Is that a true story?
It's funny you say that, Bill, because I printed out the Sharon lyrics. I have them in front of me because I was sort of curious about the same thing. Let me give David Bromberg a chance to respond.
That's a great song.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
You're welcome, Bill.
Sharon is my sister-in-law. And the red bear is my brother. And Sharon is around my age and still the dirtiest dancer I've ever seen in my life. And she's
she
wonderful.
She walks, she talks, she crawls on her belly like a reptile.
Well, she doesn't exactly do those things, but she can dance. The girl can dance.
Good for her. Bill, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me play a song. This goes way back. You wrote this with George Harrison. I don't know if it needs any introduction. Anything you want to say about the holdup before we listen to a little portion of it?
It was fun.
Absolutely. It's fun to listen to.
Yeah.
Stick up your hands, you must stand and deliver my. Stomach's empty, my clothes are all torn. Open your hearts to the joys of the giver. Only your pockets are terribly worn. This is a hold-up, no way to mistake it. We're men of violence, so don't fool around. If you have money, we're going to take it. You try and stop us, you'll end underground. We have your money, we'll ride towards the sunset, at Rosa's canteen we'll stop at the door. We'll spend all your money, just getting the nose wet, tomorrow evening we'll be back for more. The money, don't stand there and shiver. Tax time is coming, give alms to the poor, or I'll put a bullet right through your best liver. Wealth is disease, and I am the cure.
And that's The Hold Up by David Bromberg, our guest on Radio Times, a co-written with George Harrison. Let me get Al from Medford to join us because he has a question about your relationship with George Harrison. And Al, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
That was very good. I'm glad you had that queued up. David, if I may call you David. It's an honor to talk to you. It's kind of ironic. Last night, I'm looking on YouTube, and I'm going through guitar players because I'm a dabbler myself, and I'm watching, like, Roy Clark and stuff like that, and I saw you coming up, and I'm like, oh, I got to check this out. That old song, Get You on Dr. Demento, that's your Harrison song. David, I was wondering, how did you ever run into David, or, I mean, George, and how did you guys hook up and get together?
Yeah, it's a good question, Al. Thanks. Go ahead.
I met George in a couple of places in a couple of ways. I remember meeting him one time in Columbia Studios, and he sang me one of my songs. And I couldn't believe it, and I asked him where he learned it, and he said he learned it from Dylan. But that song was written at the home of a man who at the time was my manager. His name was Al Aronowitz, and it was a Thanksgiving dinner. It was just Al and his family and George and me. Huh. And Al's daughter, Brett, who's a writer like her father, had a gut string guitar, and that was the only guitar there. And we are guitar junkies, or we were, both of us. And so we passed it back and forth. We were not trying to write a song, but we did. And that's another one that happened in maybe half an hour, 45 minutes.
Wow. And what we're hearing is you two passing a guitar back and forth?
Yeah.
You can do that.
Yeah.
This, I neglected to ask you. So how old were you when you started playing guitar?
13.
Wow.
Oh, and that's George playing the slide guitar on that recording.
Oh, that's great.
I didn't credit him on the album. Dylan also played harmonica on the same album. But because I wanted their music, I didn't want to stand on their shoulders. So they were both on it. Yeah.
So you were a young teenager when you started playing guitar?
Yeah.
And took to it right away?
Pretty much. I had the measles. And I was
homesick?
Bored, and I borrowed my brother's guitar and his books, and I could read music. I'd been playing flute, and what I really liked was I could play the songs that were on the radio pretty quickly.
Did you have a band as a kid?
Yeah, I had a little band.
And were you an obsessive player, practicer?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I remember one very important moment when I must have been well under 18 because my mother was giving me a ride to the railroad station. I was going into New York, and I was, for some reason, I was in the back of the car. I remember it really well, and I'd been listening to a recording which included Sleepy John Estes doing Working Man's Blues. And there I am in the back of the car, and all of a sudden I hear it in my mind and see how he played it.
Wow.
And that was an epiphany.
We're going to end on that note, David Bromberg. Thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times. This is Not Yield from his new album, The Blues, The Whole Blues, and Nothing But The Blues. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Don't you know you've got to be strong? Leave those other men alone. Some bright sunny day, I'll be back home to stay. Yield not unto temptation, and let no one lead you astray. So many times, you're going to be lonely. So many times, you're going to be blue. But yield not. Guys alone. Some bright sunny day, I'll be back home.